You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan.
Welcome to the Catechism Hour with me, Brother Justin Bonio, the Heralds of the Gospel. And we're going to continue looking at famous apparitions of Our Lady, ones that you may or may not have heard of. But in this case, it's one that we have very prevalent in the Litany of Our Lady. She is the patroness of various associations and Catholic guilds of sorts, the Catholic Women's League and other religious orders. I think it's also the Sisters of St. Peter Claver. But what's fascinating is how few people actually know the history of Our Lady of Good Counsel. So we're going to go into a little bit of the history, and we're going to do a double episode. So we're going to do this week and next week on the same subject, and that should give us enough time to develop properly the theme, and also to give a little bit of historicity so that you yourself can go and do your research, maybe get a picture of Our Lady of Good Counsel and put it on your wall and ask for her good counsel. So let's get going. So, Our Lady of Good Counsel is a fresco. Fresco means an image that is painted on a form of plaster. And fresco means it's very fresh, or it's painted when it's wet. But what's fascinating about it is that the image originated in Albania. It's not Italian. But centuries ago, that image descended from the skies to an ancient town called Genazzano. This town in the foothills that surround Rome, beautiful medieval town, on a certain day, she decided to make Genazzano her new home. So what's interesting about the town of Genazzano? And that's where we're going to start today's episode, because if we understand why the town, then we can understand a little bit of why Our Lady chose that little town to visit and make her home. So firstly, since time immemorial, since it's in the foothills surrounding Rome, and when the summers of Rome beat down and become extremely hot, the patrician families and others would flee the city of Rome and go to these little towns on the outside of Rome to spend their summers where it was a little cooler. That's where the tradition of Rome turning off in August comes from. Unfortunately, in the pre-Christian times, these vast gardens surrounding these beautiful villas served as a stage for the varieties of pagan worships and festivals and their most perverse feasts. So they would have these games and rituals in honor of the gods whom the Romans attributed the fertility of their lands. This was part of the custom. One of these celebrations was held every April 25th in honor of the goddess Venus, or Flora. And for this event, people of all social classes, David, slaves and freemen, patricians and plebeians, gathered together for a great feast. This practice gradually dissolved as the Christian era began and those temples fell into ruin. As Christianity began to regenerate the peoples of Europe. What's fascinating about Venus, actually, is how much the Venus of the Roman is different than the Aphrodite of the Greeks are. If you go to that point of seeing the transitions, it's quite fascinating. So in the 3rd century, an order was given to build a shrine dedicated to the Mother of God under the invocation of Mother of Good Counsel on the ruins of this Roman temple. It's a temple dedicated to Venus. What's fascinating about the Litany of Our Lady is that in times gone by, the original litany, which was much shorter, people would actually go around the city of Rome visiting icons, images, and churches that were dedicated to each one of the invocations of Our Lady. And that would be the litany. They would be praying for their various intentions. So as the years went by, the city became more populous, and this shrine grew in fame. Remember, the Romans go out during the summer, and this shrine is in one of their summer villages. During the Middle Ages, the Franciscans and the Augustinians founded monasteries nearby. With the passing years, the primitive temple erected in honor of the Mother of Good Counsel began to need repair. And that's to be expected. Unfortunately, also, the shrine was small. It was built in the 3rd century. So the faithful built a larger and richer church for the solemn functions of the town. Everyone made it out to church. It wasn't this era where it was only Christmas and New Year's. So in 1356, about a century before the apparition of the miraculous image that would introduce Genazzano into the annals of the marvels within the church, the prince Pietro Giordano Colonna, whose family had acquired lordship over the city, assigned the most ancient church of the city and its parish to the care of the hermits of St. Augustine. That's one of the reasons why, until today, the Augustinians are the guardians of Our Lady of Good Counsel, Genazzano. So the faithful would thereby have the necessary pastoral assistance, and repairs could be done to the old church. By entrusting the church has an owner. Through the prayers of the faithful, the financial difficulties, unfortunately, were great, and they prevented the necessary and urgent restoration of this ancient shrine. But Our Lady, who always is there, and always there to give us a good counsel in every circumstance, provided for the necessities of men chose a third order Augustinian. So one of the third order, a family that was following the spirituality of the Augustinians, Perducha di Nocia. And it was through her that Our Lady chose to perform this great prodigy that was about to happen and to bring about the most needed and necessary restorations to the church. This pious woman was left a modest fortune following the death of her husband in 1436. Living alone, she dedicated most of her time to prayer and services of the Church of Our Lady of Good Counsel. It grieved her to see at what state the church had fallen into, and she prayed fervently to have it restored. But besides prayer, there's always actions. And in this case, she resolved to take an initiative. After obtaining permission from the friar, she donated her goods to begin this restoration in hope that others would also come on board and help complete it. A plan was drawn up for the building of a magnificent church. However, once it had begun, this pious old lady, who was already 80 years old, found that her generous offering was scarcely enough to complete the first phase of its construction. She has a pious desire. She wants to do great things. Who gave her the desire? God gave it to her. Aim high, with the hope that others would join in. And unfortunately, This is the 1400s. This is the end of the Middle Ages. This is the beginning of humanism. Instead of it being God-centered, we're human-centered. And she's doing something which is countercultural. So she has enough for one phase. And to make matters worse, nobody is coming forth to help, because everyone is concerned about other things. Everyone's got something to do. So to her complete dismay, this poor 80-year-old woman who's praying and giving everything she has. She's like the poor widow who puts her last coins into the coffers. There's nothing left. She doesn't have any more. The building had hardly risen 3 feet from the construction when construction was halt due to a lack of money. Her friends and neighborhood and the neighbors began to ridicule her. She was a dreamer, she was this, she was that. And her detractors accused her of imprudence. Many times the great visions of great things to do for God are ridiculed for a lack of prudence. But the problem is that these ones lack two things. They lack faith and they also lack vision. So to all of them, she would say to them, "My dear children, do not put too much importance on this apparent misfortune. I assure you that before my death, the Blessed Virgin and our Holy Father Augustine will finish this church begun by me." She has faith. She has vision. And because of those two, let's see what happens. On April 25th, 1467, the feast of the city's patron, St. Mark, a solemn celebration began with Mass. It was Saturday. The crowd began to gather in front of the Church of the Mother of Good Counsel. The only note in the celebration that was sad was the unfinished work of Perducha. About 4 in the afternoon, everyone heard chords of a beautiful melody that seemed to come from heaven. The people looked up towards the towers of the church and saw a white cloud that shone with 1,000 luminous rays. It gradually neared the stupefied crowd to the sound of an exceptionally beautiful melody. The cloud descended on the church of the Mother of Good Counsel and poised over the wall of an unfinished chapel, the St. Biagio, which Perducha had started. Suddenly, the bells of the old tower began to ring by themselves, and the other bells of the town rang miraculously in unison. The rays that emanated from the little cloud faded away, and the cloud itself gradually vanished, revealing a beautiful object that enchanted the gaze of the spectators. It was a painting that represented Our Lady tenderly holding her divine Son in her arms. Almost immediately, the Virgin Mary began to cure the sick and grant countless consolations to the faithful, the memory of which had been recorded for posterity by the local ecclesiastical authorities. And that's there till today. You go to the church and they've got all of it. The news of the painting and its miracle spread throughout the province and beyond, attracting multitudes. Some cities formed enthusiastic processions to see the picture that people had called Madonna di Paradiso, Our Lady of the Paradise. Because of her celestial entrance into the city, alms from all sorts, all corners, poured in as an answer to the request, an unwavering confidence that Our Lady had inspired this pious woman. Amidst the enthusiasm caused by the painting, Our Lady wished to divulge the true origin of her miraculous fresco to her devotees. Two foreigners named Giorgio and Di Salvis entered the city among a group of pilgrims that had come from Rome. They wore strange clothes and spoke a foreign tongue, saying that they arrived in Rome earlier that year from Albania. And while most people had refused to believe their story, it had a special significance for the inhabitants of Genazzano. Fascinating. We have an image coming down from heaven. Now remember, this was the late 1400s. What's happening? Well, what's happening is this. The fall of Constantinople. The Renaissance has come into full swing into Italy. The Balkans and what was formerly made up of the area of the Eastern Empire has fallen under the sway of Islam. If you're a betting person, everything is ending. There isn't much hope. There isn't much in the way of confidence. And we have Our Lady coming down from the heavens and putting herself against a wall in an unfinished church that hadn't been finished because of a lack of generosity of the faithful. This kind of puts us into an interesting perspective. It puts us into an interesting spot. She comes to the Church of Our Lady of Good Counsel. Good Counsel. When we have difficulties, what do we look for? We look for someone with wisdom. We look for someone who exhibits an exceptional level of virtue to give us the necessary help to guide us towards where we need to be go. No one goes in search of a fool. No one goes in search of someone who will guide us the wrong way. No one was to go to look for a person to beguile us and to give us trinkets when we're looking for eternal truths. So Our Lady comes to a town which seemingly had lost its way and gave it good counsel, made it a little chapel, made it a star in the firmament of Lazio, in that hill country area. What's fascinating about it is the next story, which we're going to tell at the other side of the break, in which we're going to look at what caused Our Lady to move. What caused Our Lady to continue to make her move from a faraway place to there? And that is what we see within our own lives many a time. Be wary at the visitation of the Lord. Be wary when our Lord comes by to visit us. When His mother touches us on our shoulder, make sure we're ready. And we're going to see the case of two distinct peoples. And in these two distinct peoples, we look at a people who had lost their way, but who received Mary with open arms. A people who go in search of her. And unfortunately, a tragic story on the other side. So it's interesting to look at that juxtaposition between these two stories, because they merge very well together. They bring us towards a greater vision of the whole. When we look within ourselves and within history, mostly within religious history, it's very important for us not to just look at it as events or as random events, which is the really poor way to look at history, but to look at random events that have nothing to do with ourselves. It's more important that we put ourselves into the scenario. We put ourselves into that reality. We put ourselves into the town of Genazzano. We put ourselves in the place of this pious woman. Would we be willing to do what she did? What would be our reaction? Or am I far too based on this earth not to be able to detach myself from wealth? Imagine, she was a rich woman. It says there she had quite a small fortune. With that fortune, she could have had a very comfortable life. But she gives of it all with the hope to rebuild the church. And with her copper coins, though many, but to build such a great project, were like those of the widow. They weren't enough. She was hoping the people of Genazzano had a little bit of generosity, a little bit of compassion, a little bit of love. And what did she receive in return? Well, she had ridicule, and her false friends accused her of imprudence. She had embarked on a trip without the ability to finish. Now, if we look at it another way, she was 80 years old. In a time when it took a long time to build anything, to start anything in your 80th year is imprudent. But she didn't do it for herself. She didn't do it for her name. She didn't do it for her fame. She did it for God, God alone. She did it for a greater good. What's fascinating is that if you were to have gone into a time machine and found her, she was this lady who took her time praying and cleaning a broken down church, who came from a rich family, and she desired to be nothing. She took a page out of the gospel and lived it. And because of that, we talk about her some thousand years later. So it's interesting when we look at it that this element of people who want to project themselves into history and are forgotten, and those who search to disappear, the self-abnegation, to put others forward and are celebrated. Kind of a moment for us to look at ourselves and ask ourselves, do I do my pious actions? For what reason do I do my pious actions? To receive the acclaim of the crowd, the acclaim of my friends, for spite? Some do it for spite. Or do I do it for God and God alone? This pious woman did it for God alone. And God turned it around and took of her an image of Job. And the town had to surround her. And in surrounding her, she would receive what her dream was. So we're going to go to our break. And when we come back, we're going to look at the first part of the story about how the image got there. Be back in a quick moment's time.
Thank you.
to the Catechism Hour. Here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice, wherever you are. To contact us, you can tweet us at Radio Maria Can or email catechismhour@radiomaria.ca.
Welcome back. So let's start looking at the story of these two individuals and see how their story fits into this whole narrative that we were looking at. It's interesting if we look at the history. We're going to go through this first. We're going to go through the history, and then I'm going to kind of swing back and give you a little bit of a historical view of the area of the Balkans, Anatolia, and the East to kind of situate yourself. Okay? So let's start. So, January of 1467. So the death of the last great Albanian leader, Georges Kasrota, better known as Skanderbeg. He was raised by an Albanian chief. He placed himself at the head of his own people. Skanderbeg inflicted stunning defeats on the Turkish army and occupied the fortresses all over Albania. With Skanderbeg's death, the Turkish army, finally free from the fuminating lion of war, poured into Albania, occupying all of its fortresses, cities, and provinces, with the exception of Skurati in the north of the city, north of the country, sorry. However, the city's capacity to resist was limited, and it was captured and was expected to feel the wrath of the Turks. With its fall, Christian Albania would be defeated. Faced with this prospect, those who wished to practice their faith in the Christian lands began a sad exodus. Giorgio and Discalvis also studied the possibility of fleeing, but something kept them in the town. There was a small church there, considered a shrine to the whole of the Albanian kingdom. In this church, the faithful had venerated an image of Our Lady, which had miraculously descended from heaven some 200 years before. According to the tradition, it had come from the east, having poured out immeasurable graces upon the whole population. Its church became the principal center of pilgrimage in all of Albania. Skanderbeg himself had visited this shrine more than once to ardently ask for victory in battles. Now, the shrine was threatened with an imminent destruction and profanation. These two Albanians were torn by the idea of leaving this great treasure in Albania in the hands of an enemy in order to flee this terror. In their perplexities and in their worries, they went to the old church to ask the Blessed Mother for good counsel in this moment of need. That night, consoler of the afflicted inspired both of them in their sleep. She commanded them to prepare to leave the country, which they would never see again. She added that the miraculous fresco was also going to leave for another country to escape the profanation of the hands of the Turks. Finally, she ordered them to follow the painting wherever it went. The next morning, the two friends went to the shrine. At a certain moment, they saw the image itself detach itself from the wall on which it hung for more than two centuries. Leaving its niche, it hovered for a moment and was then suddenly wrapped in a white cloud through which the image continued to be visible. This pilgrim painting left the church and left the environs of this town, traveled slowly through the air at a considerable altitude, and advanced in the direction of the Adriatic Sea. At a speed that allowed the two walkers to follow, after covering some 24 miles, they reach the coast. This is the moment that gets really interesting, because imagine all this so far has been on the voice of faith. But now faith is going to hit the, as they say, the tires are going to hit the asphalt at this point. They're encountering water. The Adriatic Sea, part of the Mediterranean water system. This isn't a little pond. This isn't a little river. This is deep water. But with the confidence that these two had, the same way that they had been soldiers. Giorgio and Discalvis walked on the waves of the Adriatic Sea. Without stopping, the pitcher left the land and advanced over the water, while the faithful two continued to follow, walking on waves, much like the Divine Master had done on the Sea of Galilee. When night would fall, the mysterious cloud, which had protected them with its shade from the heat of the day, guided them by night. Like a column of fire in the desert that guided the Jews on their exodus from Egypt. They traveled day and night until they reached the Italian coast. There, they continued following the miraculous pitcher, climbing mountains, fording rivers, passing through valleys. Finally, they reached the last and vast plain of Lazio, from where they could see the towers and domes of the Eternal City. Upon reaching the gates of the Eternal City, the cloud suddenly disappeared before their most disappointed eyes. Giorgio and Discalvis began to search the city, going from church to church, asking if a painting had descended there. All their attempts to find the painting failed. The Romans were fascinated as they regarded these two foreigners and their most bizarre tale. Shortly afterwards, amazing news came to Rome. A picture of Our Lady had appeared in the skies of Genazzano, to the sound of beautiful music, and had come to rest over the wall of a church that was being rebuilt. These two Albanians rushed to find their country's beloved treasure miraculously suspended in the air next to the wall of a chapel, as it's been suspended ever since. Although the inhabitants found the stranger stories difficult to believe, careful investigation later proved that the two were telling the truth, and that the image was indeed the same that had graced the shrine in Scutari. What's fascinating in this story, and there are many more details that we could get into, is that Our Lady demands an act of faith, but she never forsakes. She guides and indicates the way, but doesn't suck them up and throw them into Rome or drop them into Genazzano. No, she shows them the way. They decide to follow. Can you imagine yourself awaking from a dream, finding your friend had a similar dream, and then seeing all of this happen in front of you? If you were a faithless individual, maybe a more rationalist individual, you would think that maybe you had, as Scrooge says in the Christmas story, this can't be true. This must be an undigested piece of pie. When they encounter the water, How can this be? This cannot be true. When they put their first foot on the wave, what went through their minds? During the day under the sun, with the wind blowing, the cloud giving shade, but still exposed to a certain extent to the travels of water travel. Leaving their home country behind, knowing that Our Lady had told them that they'd never see their home country again. What a step. What imprudence. Remember what happened to our widow. The accusation made against her was that she was imprudent. How prudent are these two? Are they more prudent or less prudent? In the ways of the world, they are less prudent. They are people who jump before feeling their landing spot. They had no idea where this image was going to take them. They had no idea if they'd be able to walk on water. They had no idea when they arrived in Italy where they were. Once the image, in a sense, indicated Rome, the image disappears. If you look at it from a distance, you can understand why. But if you were one of those two there, what type of faith did they have to be able to grab the moment, to scurry from church to church in search of Our Lady? Were they not, in a certain sense, like Our Lady was looking for Jesus at 12 years old? As they scurried from place to place in search of Jesus. They were in search of Our Lady. And being in search of Our Lady, they didn't know where to find her. And not knowing caused an amazing level of worry, of stress, but also of a concern. Had they committed some sin, some crime, that Our Lady would have abandoned them? So, where were they? Think about it. Put yourself in their spot. Days go by in a foreign country. No one speaks your language. You're looking for an image of Our Lady. People are calling you mad. You have to be crazy. You have to be crazy. There's no other way around it. But in reality, in hindsight, in the historical eye, you are the only one who's right. How many people made a snickering response? How many people looked at them, heard their story, and said, "These poor crazy men"? We'll never know. They don't enter into the historic record. These three people were given a special vocation. Each one of them was given a special vocation. And in that vocation, they were demanded to stand on the edge. Think about it. Our 80-year-old lady who gives everything she has and has absolute confidence that Our Lady and her father, Saint Augustine, will stand and finish what she has started. Total confidence. And if you look at it, until that day, the 25th of, 26th of April, she was wrong. No one was going to help her. Everyone made fun of her and called her insane. If they maybe she lived in our day today, she would have been locked into a hospital or an old age home, put away, as she was mad. Let's look at another one. These two men leaving everything behind in Albania. What will their families think? Did they say goodbye to them? Did they say a proper goodbye? Did they tell them what was going to happen? What would the families have thought? Our Lady wants me to be with her. She's going to indicate a way in which I'm going to leave the country. Really? Does that make sense? Is that logical? And the answer comes up as no. But if you look at it, once these two Albanians, warrior companions of Skanderbeg, in the larger story, which I hope to get into, the story of Skanderbeg is fascinating because Skanderbeg was someone who had iron in his spine. He had been recruited as a janissary. Well, recruited is a bad word. It's kidnapped. And he fought as soon as he could against the Kurks, as much as he could. He had a few loyal people, but unfortunately, the heart of the country was not in for the battle. So when Skanderbeg dies, with him, the dream of Albania dies. So we need to look at this greater picture. And I'm going to quote from Pope Pius II in his address to the College of Cardinals in September 23rd. 1463. Quote, "They say we live for pleasure, and there is some truth in their words. Many among the cardinals and other officials do not live this kind of life. We must enter new paths, temperance, chastity, innocence, zeal for the faith, ardor for the cause of religion, contempt for death, desire for martyrdom." And that desire for martyrdom that has exalted the Roman Church and made her mistress over the world. It is not enough to profess the faith, to preach to the people, to denounce vice, and to extol virtue. We must make ourselves like those who have sacrificed their very lives for the heritage of the Lord. Our Lady of Good Counsel has been known as the Madonna di De Papi, the Our Lady of the Popes. Leo XIII deserves to be ranked upon one of her greater lovers of this devotion. He established the white scapular to be worn by its servants, and his motto was like a watchword to the clients of Mary. Children, he told the faithful, follow her counsels. To all she gives what is most needed to help us in this veil of tears, she gives us good counsel. As we close today's, we're going to look at this one point. How many of us are in need of good counsel, good friends, people to help us in those dark moments when everything seems wrong? It's in those moments that we need to have that counsel, that good counsel, the counsel that will bring us where we need to be and what we need to become. If we don't, then in truth, we're going to be wandering around lost. And in that way, being lost, not knowing where to go. So let's ask in a special way Our Lady of Good Counsel to give us that counsel that we need. You know, we can understand why so many groups cling to her devotion, but let's make it one of ours too. Our Lady of Good Counsel, pray for us. May God bless you all.
You've been listening to the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bonnion, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.